Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will commiserate with Chuck Todd about a series of brutal losses for the Nats, and we'll talk to Dan Graziano about the NFL's response to Brendan Sorsby's attempt to enter the league via the supplemental draft. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
People who know the sport in their bones also feel something watching Messi that they don't feel watching anybody else.
He got 88,000 people to Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn. They put the war eagle out there for him. Right. You know, that stuff, that does not happen.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
That's my entire contribution to soccer. Being sort of amazed at how many people love soccer, because I'm not one of them.
Have you seen the New Yorker cartoon?
No.
It shows the pitch and it shows the position. It just all of them. It's like kick, 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 catch.
I'm not. It's not for me. It's not for me. It's wonderful if it's for you. Just the soccer poets. Just shut up. Stop trying to get on everybody else's shoulders to elevate yourself into something important. You're not. Stop. I've gone through this with baseball poets.
Elegiac symmetry.
I love baseball. I don't want to go through it with soccer poets. I just don't. It happened again last night.
Ugh.
I am now staying.
Not possible.
Yeah, I am not now staying up far longer than I want to. I'm staying up to the ends of these games. It's after 10 o'clock. I don't want this.
I'm getting an extra mile and a half every night.
It's just walking.
No, just walking.
It happened again.
The neighborhood watch.
The Nats, first of all, go up 2-0 early on solo home runs. They head into the top of the ninth up 5-4.
Yep.
Head into the top of the ninth up 5-4. They've turned the game over to the bullpen. Meatball Mikolas has given up a couple of runs, but then left the game with the win. He left the game with the win. Again, 5-4. They bring in Poulin, or did Poulin start the game? No, they brought in Poulin.
Brought in Poulin,
and he did fine.
Earlier.
He did fine. And then they hand the ball in the ninth because they don't want Poulin to close. They hand the ball in the ninth to Orlando Ribalta. And Orlando Ribalta, and it's exactly the same thing, gets the first two outs. Then they put up Kyle Schwarber, the most dangerous hitter in baseball.
Yeah.
And this is righty-lefty.
Less dangerous as a pinch hitter historically.
Yes. Yes.
And he was scratched the day before with a minor injury.
Yes. Yeah, back, right?
I think. But to see him swinging in the on-deck circle, like...
Also, he hit a couple of loud fouls that were very, very loud.
He drops that back.
Now it's a very long. It gets to 3-2. It goes beyond the normal amount of pitches. It goes to like 10 pitches or something like that. And he walks them. Okay? Now you don't want to intentionally walk them, I guess. Although I don't know why. You want to pitch carefully. But again, a couple of loud fouls. Kyle Schwarber swings the bat faster than anyone in baseball. I mean, he's like a coiled snake. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yes.
Coiled snake. They end up walking him. He immediately goes out. He's unlike Rafael Devers. He doesn't send the pinch runner away. He doesn't do that. He understands that they're putting in somebody fast because he's the tying run. Then they bring up Derek Hill, a righty.
In the number nine spot.
In the number nine spot. And for reasons unknown to me, the baby manager overmanages, and he brings in Lovelady, who's a lefty, by the way.
An uncomfortable-looking Lovelady.
Yeah. Look, he's 33 years old, the manager. Maybe he makes mistakes. This seemed to me to be a mistake. Now, you could justify it by saying that Ribalta went, 10 pitches or 11 pitches with Schwarber. But Ribalta had gotten two outs, and nobody had hit him fairly. Lovelady comes in, gives up a two-run home run. You go, what? Two outs, two strikes.
Yeah, 1-2, right?
Again, they get to the ninth with two outs and nobody on. Nobody on. And then they lose the game. And, Michael, you think this is even worse than the night before.
Just because there was a script, you could feel as soon as Schwarber gets up, you can just sort of feel there's a momentum shift, even with the lead. And then you're just waiting for the ball to go out of the park.
Yeah. I think that's true. It's two in a row. They should have won the series already. They should have been up 3-0 in the series against a division opponent at home.
This is the third or fourth series where you can honestly say, wow, they should have won at least three.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
They had these two games. They're going into the bottom... They're going to the top of the ninth with a lead.
Yeah.
And they give up home runs all over the place. Boom, 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 boom. Home runs. Well, four home runs in those two tops, right?
Yeah.
Four home runs.
Sounds to me like you guys could use a closer. Good news, the Red Sox have one if you'd like one. Aroldis Chapman is very good, still.
Isn't he about 50 years old now?
50 or 60, but he's still
extremely
good.
The Nats aren't
going to
be buying at the deadline.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. I'm
not going to be selling.
The Nats now, look, I got, you know, we're on the text chain with Chris and with Chuck and Michael and I, and Chuck made the point, we'll have Chuck on the show in a bit. Chuck made the point, this is the difference between a contender and a pretender.
Yes, and this is what the last week has shown you. When you had the Tampa series, you had this series, these are small little cuts that are just taking away from the great start to the season and reminding you of like, oh, you have a little bit of false promise when you have the highest scoring offense.
So the baby manager, this is two games, the last game, not this game, the previous game, the baby manager said that it was the worst loss ever.
What's he going to say today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, he says we've got to find somebody who can close it out. Yes, you have to find that.
Get a ground ball.
Yeah, I just...
You have position fielders behind you. Make a play.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Zero chance they win today, right?
I don't like their chances. Is it a getaway day game?
I'll pull up the time.
I mean, sometimes they don't have day games because Philadelphia is so close.
Who's on the mound for you? Is it Scherzer or Strasburg tonight?
No, it's neither of those guys. Neither of those guys. Is it a day game or night game?
No, it's 6:45.
Okay.
But Sanchez is going.
Who's really good.
Yeah.
Christopher ADRA. Sanchez just went through like 53 innings in a row without giving up an earned run. So he's really good. So they had the second round of the NBA draft last night. And if I didn't watch the first round, what do you think the odds are I was going to watch the second round? I didn't watch 1 second of it. No, I didn't. I don't care. I'm sure Will Bond today on the show is going to say it's the most important thing that ever happened. Look who got much better. And I'm going to say the same thing I say all the time. You don't know who got much better because you don't know how this guy plays with this team yet. You don't know.
I like that the Wizards got into your SportsCenter segment yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. I was hoping not to do a sports as I am every day, hoping not to do one, but we did one. The lead story on SportsCenter this morning was about Caitlin Clark and the WNBA, in which Caitlin Clark's coach at Indiana, Stephanie White, I believe is her name, was saying it's unacceptable, unacceptable, unacceptable that the refereeing allowed Caitlin Clark to be pushed around. Why don't you go after the player who did it? Alyssa Thomas took her fist and stuck it in Caitlin Clark's neck while Caitlin Clark was down on the ground. Nobody ever mentions players. They blame everything on the referees. You know, I think if you're the league, you need to review that, and you need to discipline that. And I think people need to realize this, players in the WNBA. A lot of the money that you're making is as a result of Caitlin Clark being a basketball player. You know, it's not the only reason, but Caitlin Clark at Iowa did things to television ratings that had never been done before. Never. People watched, like millions, tens of millions of people turned on Iowa basketball primarily to see Caitlin Clark. There's a lot of great players in the WNBA. It's a better product now than it has ever been, and it will continue to improve. And I'm happy they're getting more money. But Caitlin Clark is, to my mind, if not the major factor, a major factor in popularizing women's basketball among the great masses in the country. Doesn't mean she's the best player. She's not the best player. Doesn't mean that everybody else has to bow down to Caitlin Clark. But there ought to be some recognition that we're all in this together and the rising tide floats all boats. It always has seemed to me that Caitlin Clark was the rising tide. She's not as good as Asia Wilson. She's not as good as Bridget Stewart. She's not as good as 10 or 12 players out there. But they weren't getting big money before she came along.
So I think this argument is exactly why you use the refs as the scapegoat for what you might see as a player issue so you don't disrupt the actual growth of the sport.
100%. It's the easiest way to go. It's the only way to go. it just may not be the most honest way to go. I mean, your complaint should be not just with it should be with players who do this. You know, there are dirty players on every team, in women's basketball and men's basketball and football, every team. And so it's that behavior that I guess you're right, Michael. I guess if the referees were stronger about this and the league had, you know, delivered more sanctions against this stuff, it wouldn't happen. But I think it might happen anyway. I think there's a resentment factor for Caitlin Clark. Am I the only one who thinks that?
It certainly seems that way. She gets rough treatment everywhere she goes.
Now she whines.
Yeah, she does.
She can be a pain. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, you want to say, hey, hey, enough, yeah. Right? But the history of what she brought to the sport
is astonishing, yeah.
It's, right?
Yeah.
It's remarkable. I mean, you know, 20 million people used to watch her college games.
Yeah.
It got so that when she got to the WNBA, they put her in the NBA arenas as often as they could, and she sold it. Now, she's not, I don't think she can do that anymore. I think the bloom is off that rope.
Yeah, it's faded a bit.
But I do think that she, you know, she was pioneering in the sense that she created an interest in women's professional basketball, the likes of which had not been there before. Am I safe in saying that?
Yes.
That's pretty much all I'm saying. All right, so we'll take a break. The aforementioned Chuck Todd will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are our friends, Norwegian Soft Kitten. This is called Think I'll Just Get Drunk and Drink. Very specific. And they write, hey there, Hot Bagel. We're not the least bit gruntled right now. In fact, you might say we're disgruntled, an AI concocted mailbag jingle. Have you forgotten that night when we played Mizzou and we played an impromptu 11-minute version of a Think I'll Just Get Drunk and Drink? We turned that 3-minute country punk song into a testosterone typhoon that put that auditorium into a frenzy. And do you not remember, Tony, when we played Wabash College, an all-boys school that wanted the Bengals or Bananarama? Is that a...
Bananarama.
Bananarama. It's not spelled Bananarama. Or any female band to perform that night. And when we walked out on the stage, we could tell no one was happy to see the three of us. But we exploded out of the gate, punched that crowd in the face with Saturday Evening, segued into an insane version of Mom Went to the Store. And by the time we bashed that crowd over the head with a tsunami of adrenaline in the form of our song, Nail Bait, we had every single one of the 1,200 people in that gymnasium losing their minds over us. AI doesn't give us tsunamis of adrenaline or typhoons of testosterone or punch crowds in the face. It sits there, utterly bereft of life. Come on, man. What are we even doing here? That's why we love Norwegian Soft Kit. They play in Chuck Todd. And you have heard me complain about million things, and particularly on Sundays recently, when for some reason unknown to me, the Nats have been on the featured game on Peacock, and I can't get Peacock. Now, we did find out, we got a great email saying, just say into the set NBC Sports, and you will get exactly what you want. You will get the Nats game. But Chuck Todd, you were in this same situation in Florida, right?
Oh, it's a whole nother level of how convoluted. And this is the baseball antitrust rules. This is the blackout rules. So here's the situation. I subscribe. I'm a season ticket holder to the Washington Nationals.
Yes.
I just want to display all of the things that baseball tells me I have to do in order to watch the Nats. So I'm a season ticket holder. I have the Nats TV package. Okay.
Did you pay for that? Like, so you're not watching it on channel 1261 like I am?
No, okay. I'm not. Okay. I don't have that Xfinity account anymore. Okay. So I did this, and I'll be honest, that Xfinity, I'm not going to get into how poor that streaming aspect was. But anyway, so I have the Nats package. I also have a little bit of a seam head. I have the baseball package.
Oh, okay.
So that way...
The MLB package.
And that's right. I have the whole MLB package. You know, I'll watch... They have this great... They have their own version of the Red Zone, by the way. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called Big Inning.
Have not.
I you know...
The Big great. Inning is basically the top of the ninth. I'm very very well aware of that.
Well, yeah. It's a big inning. Not a great inning.
Right.
If you're a Nats fan these days. Anyway, Big Inning is their version of Red Zone, and you'll get a four box, and they'll move from game to game, and you know, it's if the Nats aren't on, it's a way I enjoy sort of, it's like surfing the baseball games, right? You know, right. That are on at that night. Anyway, point is, I subscribe to all of this. Now, I've decamped to Florida for a couple months. We have a place in Pensacola. And I'm gonna point out Pensacola. And this has happened before.
Pensacola is so far west of Florida that it is below other states.
Yeah.
It's right? A different time zone.
Yes.
It has its own. We are in the central time zone when we're in Pensacola.
You're nowhere near Miami. Nowhere near.
Or Tampa.
Right.
In fact, and this is important because what I was complaining, the Nats were playing the Rays in Tampa. Okay? I'm in Pensacola. The driving distance from Pensacola to Tampa is about the same, 450 miles, ooh, as the driving distance between Washington, D.C., and Boston. Okay? And I just want you to keep track of all this geography here.
So. Right.
Because when you're in Pensacola, apparently that is Tampa Bay Rays territory. It is also Florida Marlins, Miami Marlins territory. But you didn't know that.
How could it be Miami Marlins territory? That's like 650 miles.
Yes. Now, I'll say this. The Pensacola AA minor league team, the Wahoos, are the Marlins. Are affiliated with the Marlins. So there's at least, I could give you that fig leaf, right?
Right.
But the point is, it's that territory. Now, why does that matter? Well, when the Nats play, I used to have a local cable subscription down there. And, you know, you might get, you'd get the sports channel that is the Rays and the sports channel that is the Marlins. But, of course, those things all went bankrupt.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, and I no longer have that local. I have this YouTube TV. It comes with you. Anyway, I'm giving a little bit too much information, but I just want all the money I pay to watch baseball to watch the Nats. And when I am in Rays territory, which Pensacola apparently is, even though I subscribe to the Nats TV package, it's blacked out in Pensacola when they play the Rays and when they play the Marlins. I can't watch the game. I go to the MLB Extra Innings. I can't watch the game. What they want me to do is pay another $20 a month for the Rays TV package in order to watch the Nats game.
It's three games a year, five games a year. It's all
right. Yeah.
Why don't you sell
and then
the house?
You throw in the Marlins.
Maybe it's considered selling the house and moving to a better place.
That's the right way. Yeah. But literally, 450 miles away, Tampa Bay Rays, and Pensacola is Tampa Bay Ray territory. I tell you, I've been going to Pensacola now. I've been married 24 years. I have yet to see a Tampa Bay Rays fan in Pensacola. There is no chance that the Tampa Bay Rays played an exhibition game that get more than five people at that game. It's just absurd.
So if you yell into the set NBC Sports,
they would say blacked out.
Oh,
that's the thing. You can't even see it. I did it the old-fashioned way. I listened to the radio for the Rays games, or stream the audio.
No, the Nats did.
Jagler, those are good guys.
Yes, like they're very good.
Oh, sure.
Nats did a lot better against Tampa Bay than they've done the last two nights. What do you think of the last two nights?
Jesus. Is this a learning experience? Well, I said Jesus, but of course it's the Lord that didn't come through for us.
Yes, Brad Lord, the first night. And then Lovelady. Right. Do you think the baby manager should have kept Ribalta in last night? Go righty-righty?
They were going to, the minute he changed, they knew they were going to pinch hit. But,
right.
Look, he did throw a lot of pitches to three batters.
Right.
And he was throwing intense pitches, right? I mean, that at-bat to Schwarber was a pretty long at-bat.
Yes, I think 10 or 11 pitches.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah, and the first batter he faced, he also, that guy fouled the ball off a lot. And it was also, I think, 10 pitches or 8 to 10 pitches. So I don't know, but I think Michael brought up the point that he thought the computer made the decision.
Yeah, that's well. That,
to do the switching.
Yeah, that often happens. That often happens when you have an analytically based design to go into these games. Is this three terrible losses? And the context, yeah. You need the Giants loss at the Giants is a 9-1. 9-1 is a terrible loss. The loss two nights ago, terrible loss. Last night, terrible loss. Rank them in importance.
I think last night's the worst loss.
Yes. Yes. Because it follows the other one. Yes.
That's right. And it makes last night's loss magnifies the previous night.
Yes.
You can chalk it up. But this is bold. Now, here's the question I have. Does the ownership believe, because we can be contenders if we want to be. I believe that if we want to try to make the last wild card, you can, but we have to go get some bullpen.
Yes.
Do you think they're going to do it?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't. I think they're going to be happy. This is the first time the Nats are 41-40. This is the first, and that's as low over 500 as you can be, one game over, to say you're over. But it's the first time since the World Series year that the Nats have been over 500 halfway through the season. And so I think they're probably very content with that and looking at a lockout situation and not wanting to get involved in long contracts, right?
Given some of that, do you think they become sellers then?
If there's only two people you can sell that would be bad, Abrams and Wood. Although, what has Wood done lately? Wood's had two terrible games. You know, he drops a ball. He has like seven strikeouts in two games. He's just fanning at stuff, right?
He's done this a few times, though, where you have these weird, like, mini slumps. And then we're going, uh-oh. And then all of a sudden he'll have eight games in a row with extra base hits. And, you know, he does seem to get out of these little slumps pretty quick. Abrams is the one I don't want him to. I know there's, because I don't. I guess they don't want to pay him, and I think we have a bunch of shortstops in the system.
Didn't they? Isn't their number one draft pick last year a shortstop? Right.
Right. Yeah, and he's been doing well. High A, but he's been doing well. Eli Willits.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope they don't do that. Curtis Meade's the one you probably
love.
Trade,
Curtis
right?
Meade.
I do too, but I mean that
should play every day. Should either play third or first every single day. Sure,
he's your Lane Thomas, isn't he?
Love Lane Thomas, and I loved him when he showed up the other day. And these things happen.
Yeah.
Are you not a World Cup guy? Are you? Are you a World Cup guy?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm not. I think you and I discussed this on text, and I'm afraid of saying it out loud because Chris is going to make fun of us, Saliza. You know, I just feel like I if I say anything negative about soccer, everybody just jumps on you, you know.
Yeah.
It's like
soccer poets.
You have to. You know, I will say this: I do enjoy these stories of the fan bases in the country. I love
the Scottish people
stories.
Drank Boston dry, something that nobody thought was possible.
Yeah, I want to see, and now they're going to Miami.
Yeah,
and you know there'll be other things down there besides drinking. I'll be curious how that goes.
Yeah, Scottish fans. You're doing a podcast. Tell us about the podcast.
Well, a sports history podcast with somebody you worked with a long time ago, J.A. Adondai.
Jay became a professor at Northwestern, didn't he?
Yeah, he is a professor at Northwestern.
Yeah, his alma mater.
We do this monthly podcast together, where each month we call it Dynastic. And each month we do this deep dive into one franchise and sort of tell the story. And it's a 3-hour podcast. Tell
what?
The story. We don't expect. Yeah, we don't expect you to listen to it.
What?
Once a month?
Yes. Yes, it's monthly. You know.
Why don't you do a half hour more often?
What's your Thursday show?
That's like taking a course. Yeah. What?
It's the idea is you listen to us over a period of time, you know, you listen a half hour at a time. I view it as instead of the 20,000 word magazine piece, 15,000 word magazine piece, it's a 3-hour podcast. So we dive in. We've done three of these so far. We actually taping another one this weekend. First one we did the Dodger, and then we bring on somebody to help us tell the story. We had Jaime Harin, the longtime Spanish language radio announcer for the Dodgers. We did Chris Mullen for the Warriors. We did Rocky Blyer for the Steelers. So it's been, we just tell the story of how did this franchise become a dynasty? What is their story? And sort of over, taking different decades.
Do you take a break in the middle and nap? I mean, 3 hours seems like a lot to me.
Oh, it is, but we're not expecting everybody to listen to it in one sitting, Tony.
Well,
so it's sort of like a mini book.
Are you together? Are you physically together? Or are you separated? Or
we were physically together the first time,
right?
And to do the first one we did, which was the Dodgers. But no, we do this remotely. Look, I'll be honest, a labor of love,
yeah.
You know, and the only way to me this has credibility, to have a real sports journalist like JA. So
yeah.
That's, and you know, we come at it and, we try to come at it that way, you know, using my experience from outside and politics, his experience, you know, but we don't do politics. Just so you know, it's kind of nice to do one podcast that isn't about politics. So
yeah,
that's also enjoyable.
All right. And it's called Dynastic.
It's called Dynastic. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, your Spotify, your Apple.
Where you get that in the Safeway, usually.
Yeah. All that.
Go to the Safeway in the podcast aisle.
Safeway, the Harris Teeter. Yeah, it's all available.
Yeah, it's great. All right, thank you, Chuck.
CBS, but you do need your, you have to put in your code.
No, I don't know my code. I hate this world. All right. Chuck Todd,
goodbye.
Boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back. Dan Graziano will explain to the degree that he can the Brendan Sorsby thing, which is very interesting to me. Very interesting. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Norwegian Soft Kitten, the song we used to do. In garages where we used to work, of course. As long as they think I was the bassist, I may as well play along. This is called Mom Went to the Store. This is a great title. Mom Went to the Store is such a great title. It's like Who Made the Egg Salad Sandwich? It's just so wonderful. Michael, if independent artists like Norwegian Soft Kitten want to send us their music and get a plate on the show, how do they go about it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Do we have a Johnny O code?
Yeah, TK triple.
Yeah. I'm going to get out on the golf course this weekend. I'm going to have many triples. Georgetown's own Dan Graziano joins us now because I want to talk about Brendan Sorsby. It looks like, and please tell me if I'm wrong, I know they said he could apply in the 2027 draft. But it looks like they totally bounced this kid. They told him to pound sand. Do I have this correct?
Oh, yeah, at least as it pertains to this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the NFL's letter to Sorsby pretty much says, look, I mean, you only came to us after you had no other options because of stuff you did that, you know, you haven't really faced consequences for. So let's pump the brakes here. And let's talk again next spring if you're still interested. That's pretty much what it said. There's rules about the supplemental draft, Tony, when they have to have it. It can't be held any later than 7 days before the first training camps open. So this year that would mean it would have to be held by about July 15th or 16th. I mean, we're inside 3 weeks there. And the league just felt like, you know, it was going to be too rushed considering what the circumstances are that will surround this young man's arrival into their league.
I was completely dumbstruck by this. I knew what the supplemental draft was. I assumed it was institutionalized every single year. I did not know that it's completely up to the discretion of the NFL to have it or not have it. I assume you knew that, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, and frankly, most years, no one applies. So there's no reason to have it. It's only if it's only for guys that weren't eligible for the draft in April and now have become eligible through for different circumstances.
Right.
So Sorsby was the only applicant this year, and the application came in last week, and they just didn't feel like that. But yeah, it's in the CBA. The NFL, in its sole discretion, can determine whether to hold a supplemental draft. So yeah, there's nothing that compels them to have one at all.
Do you think that Sorsby had reason to believe that the NFL would indeed accommodate him and put him in the supplemental draft?
Yes. In talking to people around this situation, close to the situation on both sides last week, it sounded like Sorsby and his camp were confident that they would approve his application. They were ready to go with, you know, his counselor that he's seeing for his gambling addiction, ready to send, you know, a letter to NFL teams that were interested. You know, if Roger Goodell had wanted to meet with him the way he has with some other guys that have faced disciplinary situations over the years in the NFL, they were prepared for that meeting. Like, they thought it was going to be a go. They were going to have a pro day at a Texas high school on July 10th, where teams would have come and watched him throw and gotten to talk to him a little bit. So, yes, they were making plans as if there was going to be a supplemental draft and he was going to be selected in it.
That's what I think. I think you don't, you know, just give up on the college eligibility thing unless you think that the NFL is going to allow you to do this. Why do you think the NFL said, hold on a second, Sparky, we're not going that route?
Because it's this gambling thing, and you can't, like, this is a bright line. This betting on games involving your own team, involving your own teammates, and you know this well. This goes back to 1919 and the Chicago Black Sox.
Yes.
And every sports league since has drawn this bright line. You can't do it. You cannot operate a sports league if the people who are paying to watch it have reason to wonder if the games are on the level. And that's why they stay away from this third rail. And we've heard the criticisms. Oh, all kinds of terrible people have gotten into the NFL, have done terrible things, committed crimes. All true. And the things those people have done may be objectively worse than anything Brendan Sorsby has ever done. But none of those things hit at the heart of, can we sell our league as honest? Can we sell our games as honest and fair and you know, and even? And if something is going to threaten that, even in terms of just outside perception, then the league is always going to hit the brakes and want to, you know, think and talk an awful lot more about it before finally, you know, going there, sort of breaching that beachhead, if you will.
And yet they have publicly welcomed him to apply for the 2027 mm-hmm. draft.
Right. So I think what that says is we're willing to talk and think about this, but we need more time than you gave us.
Right.
And so I don't know what will happen, whether he'll be eligible for the 27 draft, whether he'll be invited to the combine. By the time the 27 draft rolls around, it appears as if he won't have played this year unless, you know, he finds his way into the CFL or something like that.
Yeah, one of those UFL kind of leagues.
Right.
Something like that.
So, you know, I don't know what the future holds, and I don't think the NFL claims to either. But I think what that line in the letter says is focus on getting ready for the 27 draft. And I think what's implied there is, and we'll talk again, and then we'll get into it. But right now, they felt like he was trying to ram this through, and they weren't prepared for it.
So the NFL has kind of, sort of, backdoor suspended this kid for a year, right?
I guess. I mean, like, he doesn't work for them, so, like, it's, you can't really suspend a guy. But yeah,
you know what I mean. They put him in the...
not welcome in their league. Like,
yeah.
They know he's not eligible to play college football anymore, or that...
Yes.
You know, the college football wasn't going to let him play. So, yes, they've cut off his one remaining avenue to play this year. But, I mean, you know, that's not – it's hard to characterize it for me as a suspension because, like, you know, if he had graduated from, you know, from law school and every law firm in the country turned him down, they're not suspending him. You know, like, they just don't want him to work for them. So I think it's it's a unique case, obviously, and it may well be that he ends up in the NFL draft next spring and ends up playing in the NFL, but I think this just sort of speaks to the idea of where professional sports leagues are still drawing the line when it comes especially to gambling. And if you place bets on games involving your own team, even if you're not playing in them, which is the case here, it is going to be a five-alarm fire, and the league is going to really take its time and lean toward no.
Yeah. I think basically what they said is, you can't just drive up here and order like we're a takeout joint.
Yeah,
like this exactly. is our league. It's not your league. It's our league, right?
And we don't. And this thing you did, you may tell us like I was young, I was stupid. I didn't play in any of the games. But the fact of the matter is, this thing you did and that you've admitted to doing
yes.
is something we cannot abide. And so right now, the answer is no.
So you think primarily, if not exclusively, this is about his recent gambling past? Yes?
Oh, without question. Okay. That's why he's not playing in the NCAA, right? That's why the whole thing started in the first place, right?
Right. But so now we get into Wilbon 101. And Mike will use the word hypocrisy all the time. Mike will take any chance he can to take a shot at the NFL as if this stuff doesn't happen in other sports. But it is in front of us all the time that the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and baseball have partnerships with gambling interests. ESPN, where I work, where you work, has partnerships with gambling interests. And how, I get, this is a question I'm sure they sit and they wonder themselves, how do we reconcile that, you know, that we are advertising your ability to gamble with somebody who gambles and now is suspended, in essence, is being barred from the league for that. That's a hard one, is it not?
For me, no. I mean, okay. The rules are going to be different for the participants. If I bet on the NFL, I would be in trouble. And ESPN has let me know that. Because I work in, my job entails sort of the gathering of information, ESPN will not let me place bets on the NFL, on outcomes of games, on awards voting, et cetera. That's fair, I think, because like I have, you know, I have access to, theoretically, if I'm doing my job well, I have access to information that could help me make money that way.
Yeah.
And that's basically insider trading. Same is true if you play and, you know, certainly if you're in the locker room and you know the game plans and you know who's going to play, to me, I understand the point, the hypocrisy point that people are making. But the fact of the matter is, like, it's the rules are going to be different for the people involved in determining the outcomes of the games that are being bet on. And I don't think that's wrong. And
no, honestly, I agree with that.
The gambling companies that the leagues are in partnership with, it's pretty important to them too that the games aren't rigged. So I think it's going to be pretty tough for him to convince them.
I don't think anybody would object in a perfect world to this kid taking a year off from his football and working on what appears to be a gambling addiction, which leads me to this. Do you think he will ever actually play in the NFL?
I think so. And I think because, you know, this isn't going to be the last case like this that they're confronted with. You know, I mean, I have two sons. They're 22 and 20. I'll say it as nicely as possible. They don't make every right decision at this age in their lives, right? Like, so this is going to keep happening with college kids and in different forms and fashions. And I think at some point the NFL is going to have to be okay with, I mean, like if it was Arch Manning, right?
Right.
Are they going to say no? Right. So at some point it's going to, so I think they're going to probably end up using this case as a way of establishing some sort of precedent. If you do X, Y, Z and you want in, then this is the price you pay. Maybe he has a suspension to start his career. I don't know. So I do think eventually he gets in. I think between now and the spring, they'll have time to make their case, and the NFL will have time to find some ground on which they're at peace with it.
I just think that he's got to be kicking himself and his advisors have to be kicking themselves because they shut out the Texas Tech option. They said, okay, we'll pass on that because we're going to the NFL. There was not enough communication from his people to the NFL, right? There couldn't have been.
But it does seem like, based on the reporting and the information that's come out, that he had been, either through back channels or something, that they had been alerted that he wasn't going to be allowed to play.
Wow.
Either the Big 12 was going to do something
yes.
or Texas
yes.
Tech was going to do something.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me, like that option was already shut off. And that's the reason he made this pivot and did the supplemental draft application.
It's an interesting story. I mean, we've talked about it a couple of times on PTI. I would talk about it every day. I just think it's really interesting. Thanks for being on. Thank you, Dan.
My pleasure, Tony. Anytime.
Dan Graziano. That's lovely. We'll take a break and we will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, here comes Tony's mailbag. We got your emails, your faxes, and your notes. It's time for Tony's mailbag. We're gonna read some for all you folks.
That's lovely. That's John Rawson. That's lovely.
Always love that one.
You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area near you. Then pop one in and you'll be thrilled. And don't forget to go to the Arlington Cinema Draft House.
For Greg.
Yeah, Friday and Saturday.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, let the river run. Let all the dreamers wake the nation. Come the New Jerusalem. Silver cities rise, the morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on with a song. That's Carly Simon. That won the Academy Award. That's from
Working Girl.
Working Girl, which is a great movie.
Yeah, Melanie it's Griffith.
Wonderful. I think is that Alec Baldwin's first movie?
It's a wonderful movie.
Carly Simon, to my surprise, turns 83 years old today. Carly Simon was married to James Taylor at one point. Carly Simon was great.
Oh yeah.
Thanks to our guests today, Chuck Todd, Dan Graziano. Thanks as well to today's sponsor. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Let me thank Rami Candel from Potomac for a very, very nice note. I appreciate it very much. And we'll start with this.
Movie debut is Forever Lulu.
I don't know that at all.
1987 comedy mystery.
When was Working Girl?
88 was Working Girl and Beetlejuice.
Okay yeah.
It's so early then.
Yeah.
This is from Kyle Gebhardt. I'll tell you who Kyle Gebhardt is later. Tony, I've been a fan of you and Wilbon since I was 12. Thanks for everything you've done for sports. One of my D.C. buddies listens to your podcast regularly. He told me that you made mention of the AM tournament at Columbia a few weeks back and how tough the pins were. I very much agree. It was a fantastic tournament and so much fun. Glad you shot a billion because it felt like I was going to also. Given that you're a member there, I want to say thank you, in addition to the staff, especially Delmar and Alex and the other members I saw, for allowing us to take over the course that week. Having a fantastic club and great course essentially shut down for 4 days to have us all come out and play is not unappreciated. I tried to pass that along, but please reiterate it for me. He won. He won the tournament. He is the best amateur in Maryland this year.
That's great.
It's a tough track, and he did a great job. Yeah.
So I'm sure he's had some good matches with Alex over the years.
I would think so. Maybe Delmar, too.
Yeah.
Maybe Delmar, too. From Abraham.
He won a five-way playoff to get medalist honors.
Is that right?
Yeah, wow. Before getting into match play.
So he won both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. From Abraham in Silver Spring, you think Wilbon has a separate text chain with just dads? James Woods' dad, Caleb Williams' dad, DeBonce's dad. Tell him I'd be happy to introduce him to my dad. I'll hang up and listen.
You try some of my dad's chips.
Yes. Steve Gilmore, San Angelo, Texas. Dear Captain Potato Poet, do you think Wilbon and Messi's dad and Richard Dent discuss the NBA draft ratings in China in their text chain? Mike Chaput. Like in Aiken, South Carolina, a lovely little town. Your guests never cease to amaze. New voices, familiar voices, and then you throw in Marv Albert, now Michaels, as they say, gold, Jerry, gold. There's a scene in Project Hail Mary where the hero is sharing his marital situation with the alien, Rocky. Yes, I was married, but she left me for Mark. Rocky thinks for a minute and says, I hate Mark. If the screenwriter was a little, I'm sure the ex would have left for a man named Duke. Then, of course, I hate Duke. That's my overriding thought watching that scene. Thank you, Steve Sands. From Rick Schroeder. Not that Rick Schroeder, I wouldn't think.
Wouldn't think. Could be, though.
I was able to enjoy several three-generation golf days with my dad and my son. One memorable moment was a 1987 outing at Windswept Dunes, purportedly the longest course in Florida outside of Panama City, Florida. When we were there on a family vacation, we teed off early as a threesome in the fog. The second hole was a par three with a pond to carry. We could only see about 30 feet of the pond because of the fog. We took the carts up to look at the green as we'd never played the course before. We used the golf cart GPS for the distance and used the tee blocks for a directional aid and tee off. My second and 16-year-old son from the tips, middle tees for me and the senior tees for my 76-year-old dad. Three shots, no splashes. When we got to the green, we discovered we were all within 15 feet of the hole with our blind shots. Alas, no birdies. We made several more trips to Panama City, enjoying family and friend vacations. This one, four-generation trip after my first grandson was born in 2014 and the last trip in 2023 to spread the ashes of my deceased parents and sister. My dad didn't take up golf until his 30s. And after one particularly helpful golf tip, he went from a lifelong slicer to a senior golfer who probably hit about 90% of the fairways from age 65 to 85. Enjoy your family golf.
Drop the right foot back.
From David Spence, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Dear great potato farmer, I am sorry for being slow in sending a great thanks for reading my past email on the wonderful Dan Byrne with special guest Orit Shimoni show in Kingston, Ontario at the Broom Factory. I was able to meet the longtime emailer from Kingston, Don Ames, along with many other littles. Your broadcast was able to reach these littles who attended Bill Miklas, Don Lewis, Mike Carroll, as well as a few others who didn't hang around too long after the show. I really hope we can get a Littles Palooza this summer in Kingston at the Portsmouth or Toucan Tavern. Superb performance by Dan and Orit, who have traveled many a country together performing their songs that have a certain je ne sais quoi. It was La Cheeserie night and my David Aldridge moment. Mr. Tony, your golf game sounds similar to my own. Pars few and far between. Learned long time ago I stunk, but I love the game. Good luck with the new sandwich. I mentioned last time about squirrels eating my planted potatoes. The next week, I caught one of our own dogs in there digging and eating them. She loves greens and vegetables. Can't have your own dog eat it.
No.
Christopher Lindemann in Los Angeles. Enjoyed listening to the Chuck Culpepper segment this morning, as I always do when he's on. I lived and worked near New Bedford, and Chuck is correct in his opinion that the Whaling Museum is great. A place from one of your favorite novels, Moby Dick, the Seaman's Bethel, is on the same street you should you wish to visit on a Melville pilgrimage. Being a sea captain, I'm sure you will enjoy connecting to captains from the distant past. From Les Cossack in Galena, Ohio. People need to know this. Africa Road is currently closed between Lewis Center Road and Plum Road. This is quite inconvenient.
Yes, it is.
Dean Mendez in Clifton Park, New York. I don't know where that is. I'm a third-generation Cape Verdean American. I was thrilled to hear your interview with Chuck Culpepper about the World Cup team and the story behind it. I was so proud to hear this conversation on your podcast. Cabo Verde is shocking the world and getting recognition I never imagined. We are big time now. In this country, you likely never heard of Cabo Verde or Cape Verdeans unless you lived in southeastern New England. Cabo is actually the Portuguese word for Cape. They are used interchangeably in referring to the country. Brockton, not Boston, has the largest population of Cape Verdeans in the United States. It's the home of A.J. DeBanza. I didn't know that. We live all over that region, Cape Cod and Rhode Island. Three of my grandparents emigrated from Cabo Verde. My paternal grandmother sailed across the Atlantic just like Columbus in the early 20th century and landed in New Bedford. Most of that generation never went back and told stories of drought and famine. They found work fishing in factories and in the cranberry bogs. As I grew up and moved out of the region, I realized no one knew about my heritage, and I was constantly having to explain it to people who had no clue and would reply, Cape what? I've been texted and emailed by so many people lately who only know Cabo Verde because of me, and I am the only one they ever met. This has literally put us on the map. As Chuck mentioned, or some simulations of world maps, Cabo Verde is missing. I've added it a few times when I saw that. We have lived in existence well under the radar, but not likely any longer. I didn't realize that a couple of draws could mean so much. On June 1st, the person to whom I'm related by marriage was and I were celebrating our 20th year of the relationship in Portugal. Randomly, we ran into Cabo Verde team at our hotel in Lisbon. They were delighted to hear about my family connections to the islands. The photo is from that day. Little did any of us have any idea what was going to happen when they played the games. I'd like to be the official Cape Verdean of the podcast. Sure, I'm guessing I might be the only one, I would think so, who listens to the podcast. It would still be an honor. Go Blue Sharks on to the next round. And there's a lovely picture here.
Isn't that nice?
This is really nice. Really nice. From Papa Thiam in Paris, France. I've been thinking of you for comic relief in the past few days, imagining your rants on a fictional vacation in Paris where current temperatures are in the mid-100s. In a country where most places are not air-conditioned, you would have the time of your life. And should you need medical services for any reason during your stay here, I can have my brother tell you about the time he broke his ankle outside my building last month and got treated for free at the local hospital, including x-rays and cast, by interns unable to figure out the billing for a foreign visitor and just told him to go. Great service, as long as you're not in a hurry and don't have to spend the night in an 85-degree room. All you have to do is enjoy that, just hop on a short 7-hour flight from D.C. So really a trip that would probably feature everything you love. I can recommend a few restaurants if you're interested. From Rafael Figueroa, as a Puerto Rican, I'm very familiar with the sweetness of rum. I agree with the suggestion that a reserve or 15-year-old rum should be first enjoyed neat. However, don't discard the Coke, as it is essential for the best refreshing drink of the summer. The Cuba Libre was created after the Cuban Revolution. The key difference is that the addition of lime, which makes it one of those best drinks available. If it's a hot day, especially after harvesting your potatoes, I highly recommend having one. You will certainly appreciate that. We could try that.
Yeah, sure.
Kevin Coy, Youngstown, Ohio. Dear Dr. Orange Man, did you know that the Home Run Derby has moved to a streaming service starting this year? It's now on Netflix. That's it. That's the email. I'll hang up and listen for the explosion. I think we get Netflix.
You get Netflix. But again, the issue is you can't go from the Home Run Derby then to anything else.
Yes. Yeah, you're sort of stuck on that platform.
For how long?
Well, then when you switch out, it takes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From Lee Gordon in Boynton Beach, Florida. Ahoy, Captain Potato Man. Not only was I unaware if Wyndham Clark had ever apologized to Oakmont, he also never apologized to me for hitting me in the leg at the Travelers Championship in 2019. Attached are two pictures for the viewers on News Channel 8. In one, you can see Clark taking a swing from where he took his drop after his tee shot on the par 3 fifth hole ricocheted off my shin and landed on the cart path. But wait, there's more. Later in the same round, as I was watching him at the drivable par 4 15th hole, Clark claimed another victim. His tee shot hit the guy in the white shirt in the other picture. What are the odds? Please tell my cousin Jim Shapiro to eat it. So, yeah, they're, wow.
Aim small, miss small.
Yeah, wow. Mike Roseberry, State College, Pennsylvania. After 5 years of trying, I finally hit the lottery for Wimbledon tickets. So the person to whom I'm related by marriage and I are taking a trip to the UK. The funny thing with the ticket ballot is you can't ask for a day or court. They just assign you one. Fortunately, we lucked into the third round center court, so we should see some quality players. I can only assume that DG will be in attendance somewhere, so I'll be on the lookout for him. The real reason I wrote is that I wanted some London pub recommendations from Nigel, something properly seedy where you can drink warm gin and meet proper villains, the kind of place that Bill Sykes would call home.
You can find an Applebee's. Those are always lovely. Yeah.
From Paul Tatum. I've been trying to catch up with the show, but it seems every time I get close, a few more are added. Not too bad, especially since I will hopefully be on a plane somewhere in July to fly to Texas and then to Louisiana to visit family. Three things. You mentioned watching the Nats in Spanish. I can one-up you on that. My first year in Qatar, I was in the staff accommodation and looked for something to watch. I found a local broadcast of women's volleyball in Arabic. Not a problem, I thought, until I had to go to the kitchen to get something and I had no idea what was going on. I've been here 14 years. I understand very little Arabic. Don't even ask me to read it or recognize my name. When I graduated with a master's from Qatar University, my classmates had to point out my seat because the name was written in Arabic. You talked about getting calls about your loan being approved. I was going to say, move to Qatar. We easily recognize spam calls because they are from a different country calling code. I was able to block the numbers, and that was it until 2 days ago when I got a local number, and a lady was asking if I wanted to apply for an American Express card. Number three, everyone is still talking about their names. I was named Patty Joe, which is not too common, especially with an I. When I was in trouble with my mother, my name suddenly changed to Patricia Josephine. Never a good thing. I was Anthony. Not good. That's it from my end, except for our days. It's heating up to 45 degrees Celsius, 113 Whoa. Fahrenheit. Thank you, Patty.
No, thank you.
Joseph O'Hara, your friendly National Mall Park Ranger. A couple of days ago, while working at the Lincoln Memorial Undercroft, during one of our soft openings, a coworker asked if I listened to the pod. I told him yes. He then chuckled and said his grandfather listens to the pod and wanted to know if he knew me. The connective tissue is strong. Also, I saw a can of sliced potatoes at the Southeast DC Safeway, and I'm happy that your potato yield is going well and that you decided to name one of your products after your golf game. So, you know, I hope it works.
We have high
hopes.
We
are scared now because the green stalks are so high.
Very high. It looks like Jack and the Beanstalk high.
Maybe there's, we didn't plant potatoes. Maybe
it's
we
similar to the monster squash from last summer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Something in the soil.
This is great. From Steve McCollum in Washington, D.C. Can DeBanza pitch? That's funny. If you're out on your bike, kind everyone, as always, do wear white.
How much weight do you think I could bench press? Just make a guess. Ballpark figure.
I'll just get drunk and drink. just get drunk and screw. But if I did that, drunks would spew. Can't imagine life getting better. I just got a Dear John letter. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. I'll be so polluted I can't think. When I wake up, only sweet Jesus knows. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. Job just the other day. The bank gun took my truck away. Every day I keep getting madder. If I don't win soon, I'll burst my bladder. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. Dog up and died. I laid in bed and cried and cried. Didn't know what else I could do. So I vomited myself until I blew. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. Think I'll just get drunk and drink. So polluted I can't think. When I wake up, only sweet Jesus knows. Think I'll just get drunk and drink.
Mom went to the store.